In April of 1975, Elvis Presley purchased a Convair 880 airplane from Delta Airlines and refurbished it for his personal travel at a cost of over $600,000. That's almost $3 million in today's dollars. So what was it like flying for Elvis back in those days? Well, glad y'all asked, because Cal and Chris have connected with the former pilot for Elvis himself, Mr. Ron Strauss, to get his stories about what it was like to be flying with the king. Boys, y'all are clear for departure.
And once again, broadcasting from the northeast tower of Pete's Castle, where the customer is king in beautiful downtown South Coal Mountain, this is The Crossing, where the music meets the memories. I am Coal Mountain Cal, along with my partner Chris Cheeto Cheatham and the good doctor Steve Thomason, and bringing you another stellar episode of The Crossing. Chris, how y'all doing?
Welcome to 2023. We finally made it back here at Pete's Castle. Got the microphones fired up.
Sitting out here at the fire pit.
The Professor Steve has got his new equipment booted up, and it just gets better and better, and the equipment gets smaller and smaller. That's right. I absolutely love it.
Love it.
But anyway, the last few podcasts we've had, we've interviewed some country music Hall of Famers. I mean, we've
rubbed elbows with royalty.
We really have.
Yeah. We have been on a run.
Yeah. We have been on a run. So how do you top that?
Hang on to your seat. Buckle up, boys. Folks, tonight our special guest is none other than Mr. Ron Strauss of Ormond Beach, Florida. Now, who is Ron Strauss, you say? Well, let me give you a little background. A couple of weeks ago, Chris and I went on a little mini vacation over to Memphis, and we went to Graceland. And we toured the plane, the Lisa Marie, Elvis, Memphis, USA, and all that good stuff. And got home, and I was still fired up, so I was scrolling through YouTube. And I found a video of Elvis's pilot, Mr. Ron Strauss. And I got to watching it, and I said, we have got to book this man on the show. And lo and behold, he called us. I don't know why, but he did.
There's plenty of time for him to regret that.
Yeah, that's right.
So let's don't waste any more time. Mr. Ron, thank you so much again for jumping on the call with us. We're not going to take up much of your time, but how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing just fine, and Happy New Year to you guys.
Same to you, brother. And you are the favorite son of, is it Fonda, Iowa? Is that how I read that?
Yep.
Born, what year were you born, Ron?
1939.
How was life in Iowa about that time? Cold, I guess.
It was cold.
I hear you.
About the time I left there.
So,
you still have family in Iowa, Ron?
Well, I got two nieces. My four brothers, they all passed away. My sister passed away. So I'm just there by myself.
Gotcha. Well, a little background told me that, first and foremost, you were a member of the United States Air Force. So thank you for your service with that.
You're welcome.
And I see you flew several hours, about 3,400 hours backwards and forth over to Vietnam. You were in the service around 12 years, is that correct?
Yep.
Hey, Ron, what got you into flying? Was it something you just always aspired to do as a young child, or is it something you just kind of fell into as you grew up?
Well, my dad took us flying, the two brothers, out of Sac City, Iowa, back when I was, 8 or 10 years old, and I fell in love with it, and I said, aviation is for me, so that's what I've done.
Never look back.
Nope.
So, Ron, was your father a pilot?
No, he wasn't. He was a Ford dealership owner.
So, nobody in the family was into aviation. You were the first?
Well, no, my brother was an Air Force pilot.
Oh, he kind of gave you the bug, I guess, a little bit.
Yeah, part of it.
So, you started out as an engineer and just kind of worked your way up, I guess?
Well, I started off as a mechanic, aircraft and engine mechanic on the B-47. And then I worked up my way to a flight engineer on the C-141A model. And then I got out of the Air Force and took the GI Bill and got all my pilot training.
At a private institution, I guess.
Yep.
That's awesome. So when you started flying, you were like a commercial pilot for a Nicaraguan Airlines, is that correct?
Well, initially I got hired as a flight engineer flying the Convair 990 out of Berlin, Germany.
Gotcha.
And then I got furloughed, and then I went to work as a first officer and an engineer on for Lenica, which was a Nicaraguan-owned flag carrier.
Did your brother continue to stay in the service, or did he go private as well?
No, he retired after 20 years, and then all he did all of his life was fly.
Folks, Mr. Ron, I've seen he doesn't like to dwell on it a whole lot, but he was actually involved in a hijacking situation in Nicaragua. Is that correct?
Yep, sure it is.
And he has a book called Destined to Fly, The Fascinating True Story of Pilot to the King. So you can read all about that and his hijacking situation. But if you want to touch just quickly and briefly on it, we'd like to hear just a little bit of it.
Well, I flew out of Managua, Nicaragua, to Cuba with, I think, around 20 political prisoners. And Ortega, which is now the president of Nicaragua, he was one of the 20 political prisoners. And I had a gun at my head all the time, and it was interesting.
No pressure there. I'm sure you're trying to keep that thing smooth. Didn't want that gun to go off.
No.
So did your parents, were they alive during the whole time that you were in the service and flying? And if so, you know, were you able to stay in touch with them? I can only imagine a worried mother.
Well, yes, my mother and father was alive at that time. I was in the military. And then my father died when I was in the military. And then my mother passed on when I became a civilian pilot.
What was your next job after the Nicaraguan flight?
Well, I got recalled with Modern Air, and that's where I flew the Convair 990 as a pilot.
Gotcha. What kind of? Oh, was that the one out of Germany?
Yep.
How long of a flight would that be when you would do it?
Well, we flew charters out of Berlin to different vacation spots. And some of them were as short as 2 hours, and some of them was we flew down to Tenerife, which was 5 hours.
Gotcha.
And what years were these, Ron, whenever you were doing that?
Well, from 71 to 74.
During that time, let's talk. I mean, let's just go ahead and get into what kind of music you were into at that time. I mean, did you have any favorite groups, or what kind of music were you into?
I like country and western.
All right, my man.
And Elvis asked me about that, and he says, "Well, what kind of music do you like?" And I said, "Country and western." And he says, "Well, that's going to be dead."
So you get back to the States, and there's a particular guy looking for somebody with a crew with some experience with a Convair 880. So who was that guy?
Nigel Winfield. He was the broker that sold Elvis that particular airplane.
So that's how Vernon got. He went through Nigel to get to you guys.
Yes.
So what was your connection with Nigel? You were just the man on the scene?
Out at the airport, Miami International, and I was working on an 880, getting it ready to go, and it was a holiday. I can't remember which one. And we became friends then, and I'd done him some favors, a few probably I shouldn't have, but I did. And what the hell, you got to make money somehow.
Exactly. How did the interview with Vernon go? Was it pretty extensive?
Well, no, it was really short. You know, I asked Nigel, I said, "Hey, what's this interview going to be like?" And he says, "I don't know. I don't have a clue, but just make sure you know how much money you want." Well, Elwood David, he went in first, and he didn't last but, you know, a couple, 3 minutes. And then it was my turn, and I went in, and Vernon asked me two questions. He said, "We'll do the entertaining, and you do the flying." I said, yes, sir, no problem. How much money you want to make? And I told him, and that was it. That was the termination of the interview.
So where did you meet with Vernon? You may have covered that, and I'm sorry, I might have missed it. But where did you actually meet with Vernon?
In the mansion.
Okay, so his office at the mansion?
Yep.
Okay.
So they got the plane, they refurbished it after 5 or 6 months, kind of somewhere around that time period, and then y'all went and picked it up and flew it to Nashville, or did you go to Nashville and pick it up?
Well, no, we went to Dallas, Mansion Field in Fort Worth, and then we flew it to, and that's the first time we saw the airplane that was completely redone. And then we flew it to Long Beach, and we had some maintenance done there, and then we flew it to Nashville, and actually Smyrna, just south of Nashville, and I had it certified, and then we flew it to Memphis.
Where were you living at the time, Ron, whenever you got the call?
I was living in Miami, and then I had to move to, and the family, we all moved to Memphis.
Folks, the die has been cast. Ron is a pilot for Elvis, and when we come back from our break out of segment one here, we're going to hear some Elvis stories. And I know we're all looking forward to that. Hey, Steve, let's go out with a little Suspicious Minds. That's one of my favorites.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby. Why can't you see what you're doing to me? When you don't believe a word I say, we can't go on together with suspicious.
Entertainment Mart on Buford Dam Road in Cumming, Georgia is your stop for all your electronic services, sales, and repairs. They offer in-home repairs, or you can drop it off. You need a car radio installed? Well, they specialize in Pioneer and AudioVox radios, speakers, and equalizers. And for all you out there on the road, you big rig drivers, they are your authorized Cobra CB dealer for radios and linears.
Come on back now, you hear? Well, you know what? Don't let smoking catch you lead-footing because they got you fuzz busters and passport radar detectors. That's Entertainment Mart. Ask for Ralph or Tommy.
Hey, this is Brother Greg Martin of the Kentucky Headhunters, and you are listening to Chris and Cold Mountain Cow here on The Crossing, where the music meets the memories. And every now and then, my memory is pretty good. Down the Dumas
Walker. Looking for affordable propane prices and the best service? No worries. Call Mills Fuel Service today for fast, courteous service that will have your tank filled and ready for the cooler temperatures. Mills Fuel Service has dedicated over 50 years of service to North Georgia, providing clean, efficient propane at affordable prices. Tank rentals are available. 3 locations to serve you in Dawsonville, Cumming, and Dahlonega. Call them today, 706-265-3394. Mills Fuel Service, for all your LP gas services.
Wise men say only fools rush in, but I can't help falling in love with you.
All right, and we are back. We are meeting with Mr. Ron Strauss, the pilot for Mr. Elvis Presley, who hopefully, if you're listening to this podcast, you are familiar with. My children, who are 16 and 20, they know very well who Elvis is, and we can get into the whole latest movie that's come out and whatnot. But where we left off, Ron, he had just accepted the gig working for Elvis Presley. He picked up the family, moved them from Miami. And Ron, you moved to Memphis at that point, correct?
Yep.
And who all was part of the family? You had the wife and you have children at that point?
Well, I had two children, Ron Jr. and Tammy, my daughter.
All right.
So tell us about that first flight. I know you've kept the logbook over all these years. Where was the first flight you took Elvis to?
Well, our first flight with Elvis on board was to Las Vegas.
Really? Was that the first time you'd met him?
Well, it's funny because I met him. It was really interesting.
Oh.
Because we flew from Smyrna to Memphis. And we thought there would be a big crowd there and we'd meet Elvis. And nobody was there, actually. So the next day, the crew came out there. Same thing, no Elvis. So we waited till 4 or 5 o'clock. And we went home or to the motel or whatever. And then the third day, we went out, still no Elvis. What the heck's going on here? And so then security came out first, and they said, Elvis is on his way. He wanted to meet the crew, see the airplane. And I said, well, that's good. So we're all looking out the window, and here comes Elvis. And Ellen went out first to meet him, and then the next person was me. And Elvis, he was sitting on the back of one of the chairs, and he says, well, I guess you know who I am. I says, yes, sir, Mr. Presley. And he says, none of this sir stuff, Mr. Presley, none of that stuff. He says, may I call you Ron? And I says, yes, sir. And he says, I told you none of that sir stuff. and we became friends right then.
Oh, yeah. I think, Producer Steve, I think you got a question.
Yeah, I got a question for you. So at the time you started flying for Elvis, he was obviously at the top of his game. I mean, he was an international star. And so how old were your kids, and were they big fans? Were you a fan of him at the time? That must have been like getting a call these days asking you to be the pilot for Taylor Swift or something, you know. I just wondered how your kids felt about you flying for this huge star.
Well, my son, he could care less about who I flew for, and he definitely was not a fan of Elvis. But my daughter, she, I think she was about 13 or 14. She was a big fan of Elvis.
I'm sure she
many,
was.
Many times.
So, I mean, we're talking about here in the 70s, mid-70s. Is that right, Ron, that you would have taken the job working for Elvis?
Yep.
So your children were probably into rock and roll, we'll say Led Zeppelin and bands like that, Stones.
Yep.
And you're still of course a fan
just
of country yeah. Western at this point too, right?
Yeah.
So
Elvis asked me about that. When he came in the cockpit one time, he says, "Ron, you busy?" I said, "No, not really." And he says, "Hey, can I ask you a question?" Hey, you bet. And he said, we're about the same age. He said, what did you think of me when we were younger, or when I was younger? And I says, Elvis, I hated your ass. And he really looked back at me. He thought, wow, nobody talks back to Elvis.
Just got to keep it honest.
Said, well, Ron, would you mind explaining that? And I said, well, Elvis, I was taking out these young ladies and, having entertainment. And all they could talk about was you, Elvis.
Yeah.
And I hated you. And he says, well, what about now? And I says, you're the greatest.
Of course.
I was born at night, but not last night.
Now, being a pilot with Elvis, I mean, that's not a 9-to-5 job. Tell us about the on-call situation with that.
Well, the on-call, we were on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the only time that we were on a duty, basically, was when we were on tour. And then when we were off tour, he toured for basically 2 weeks at a time. And then on his off time, he would go to different places. We would spend a lot of time out in Palm Springs, especially in the winter. And that was just the way it was. We were on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
So what did you do during the quote-unquote downtime when you were waiting on that call?
Well, we could do anything we wanted, but that was before cell phones and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So had to be, you know, on a landline available all the time.
I've heard the story of when the Aloha from Hawaii special was filmed, and then you guys flew out there, and you were talking about your wife was wanting to go. Could you tell that story?
Well, here's the story, the straight poop.
That's what we're here for, brother.
You know, when Elvis got done with the airplane, it would only carry 29 people. I flew it initially as a passenger airplane, which would carry maybe 120 people. But the airplane burned about an average of 2,000 gallons an hour. And so we found out we were going to go to Honolulu. And so I called Joe Esposito and I said, "Hey, Joe, is there any chance that my wife could go on this trip?" And he says, "Well, she can fly with us to Oakland, because that's where we were going to get fuel. But from Oakland to Honolulu, the airplane is booked. In fact, it's overbooked." And I says, "Are you sure of that?" And he says, "Yep, I'm positive." Mm. All right. So, of course, my wife didn't go. And we went to Oakland. And like I said, there was four open seats. And then when we got to Oakland, going to Honolulu, there were still four open seats. And I was madder than hell, but I didn't let it on.
Oh, no.
About halfway to Honolulu, Elvis comes in the cockpit. "How's it going, gang?" And I said, "Well, the weather's good, and we'll be there in a couple hours, no problem." And he says, "Ron, I understand you're a little bit," I won't use the word he used.
Oh, you can use it. We're at FCC. We're good.
But anyway, he says, "I understand you're a little bit ticked."
Yeah.
And I said, "Nope, I'm fine, Elvis, no problem." "No," he says, "I'm madder than hell. Your wife, Betty, should be on this trip." I said, "No, no problem. Maybe next time." "No," he says, "it is a problem." He says, "I want your wife out of here tomorrow. First class all the way, and I'm paying for everything." And I said, "Nope, I ain't going to do that, Elvis." And he says, "Well, let me ask you something. Do you like flying for me?" "Yep." "Do I pay you enough?" "Yep." And he says, "If she ain't out here tomorrow, I'll replace you." I wouldn't go take a chance. You know, I don't think he would have, but you never know.
He was
called her up, first class airline ticket all the way, no problem.
He had lots of acts of generosity like that.
She returned back to her job and in Memphis, and of course with the kids, she had to worry about that. And then we returned, I don't know, 5 or 6 days later. And Elvis came in the cockpit halfway. He says, "Hey, did Betty enjoy her stay here?" I said, "She sure did. And I want to thank you. And she wants to thank you." He says, "Nothing's too good for my troops." Well, then I had a whole bunch of stack of maintenance bills, fuel bills, et cetera. And I never dealt financially with Elvis, never. It was always with Vernon. And so I presented all the bills to him and authorized the payment. And then I had this airline ticket. I wish I'd have kept the stub, darn it, but I didn't. And I sort of sheepish, you know, gave it to him. And he says, "Nancy, just pay him." And I said, "But Mr. Presley, don't you want to look at that a little bit?" And he says, "No, I talked to Elvis last night. No problem. Pay him." And boy, they did. They paid me with the check right out.
And Vernon was a pretty easy guy to work with, I assume.
Well, he was. Anyway, to us, he was fantastic. That's no wonderful. Problem at all.
And you had no business dealings, I guess, with the colonel?
No, I never dealt with him.
Never dealt with him. You got to meet him, I assume, though.
Well, I did, but I didn't nothing's good to say about him.
I got you. Yeah. Perfectly understand.
Now, the band and crew, they mostly flew commercial, I guess, didn't they? Or...
Well, the band, they flew, they chartered a 707 for, I think it was McCulloch or whatever they're called. And they all flew on that 707. But there was, like I said, there was maybe 8 or 10 people that normally would fly on the Convair Galiza.
Now, has anything changed so much with the plane compared to what it is now? Because Cal and I, like a month ago, got to, you know, take the tour, of course, of the plane. Is it pretty much the same now as it was then as far as passengers and capacity?
Well, it's configured exactly the same way.
Okay.
No problem.
Okay.
And just, they put 3 security cameras on there, and then they put plastic on all the seats and beds and stuff like that.
Right.
I got one question leading out of this segment to finish it up with. Explain to our listeners, and I know a little bit about it, the ATC, air traffic control guys, talking to you during the flight, they'd ask you if you had Elvis on there. Is that correct?
Well, that's true. You know, numerous times we would fly, on tour, we would fly during the day. And when he was off, he would only fly at night, basically. And a lot of the ATC guys would say, is Elvis still on there or really on there? And I said, you bet. And one time he was in the cockpit, and they asked that, and I says, here, Alice, there, talk to these people. And he did. He says, hey, how's it going, gang, or whatever. It was pretty cute.
Well, one last question, Ron, before we end this segment. We know that Elvis Presley was the biggest star that ever graced the Lisa Marie. But were there any other stars that you were just like, oh my God, who, I cannot believe they're flying, they're with us on the Lisa Marie. Anybody else that would have flown with you?
Well, you know, George Hamilton, on the funeral, we went out to, I think it was Long Beach area, and picked up Priscilla, George Hamilton, and a couple other ones. I can't remember who all was on the airplane. And then we flew him back to the funeral. And after the funeral, we flew him back to Long Beach area. And then that was it. We flew him back to Memphis. And then that was the last flight I made on the airplane.
Interesting stories, no doubt. We're going to go out of this segment. I'm going to go to my king voice. I'm going to go, I'm going to be Elvis talking to the flight controllers. 880EP, give me some of that promised land, Steve. We're going out on segment 2. You listen to The Crossing, where the music meets the memories.
I left my home in Norfolk, Virginia, California, home of mine. Straddled that Greyhound and rode him into Raleigh and on across Carolina. Had motor trouble to turn into a struggle halfway across Alabama. Well, a hound broke down and left us all stranded in downtown Birmingham. Well, right away up on me, a through train ticket right across Mississippi clean. I was on that midnight flyer out of Birmingham smoking in the New Orleans. Somebody help me get out of Louisiana, just help me get to Houston town. There are people there who care a little about me and I won't let the poor boy down.
It's the Ben Franklin Super Saturday Spectacular Sale. Check out these specials. Ban roll-on deodorant, 73 cents. Listerine, $1.97. Coda Cutter Film, $1.09. 2 bars of Irish Spring Soap is only 37 cents. Copper Tone Suntan Lotion, 78 cents a bottle. And Pepsodent, 53 cents. These deals and many more at Ben Franklin, your anchor store in Lanier Village.
Transforming the way you listen to sports.
Yep, we've covered all of it, at least since 1978, 79, 80, 81, 82. Okay, you get the point. We've got it covered. The North Georgia Sports League.
Go ahead, like us on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. Keyword search, North Georgia Sports League.
Ladies, got that sewing project that you got on your mind? Well, you need to go to the Fabric Outlet in Cumming. They're located right past the Globe Station. Check them out for all your patterns, hemware, and sewing needs. No doubt about it. See you at the Fabric Outlet for that next sewing project.
Hey, this is Joe Bonzel with the Oak Ridge Boys, and you're listening to Chris and Cal, along with producer Steve. This is The Crossing, where the music meets memories.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog, you're crying all the time. You ain't nothing but a hound dog, crying all the time. Well, you ain't never caught a rabbit, and you ain't no friend of mine. Well, they said you was hired.
We are back. This is our third and final segment with our pilot for this evening, Mr. Ron Strauss. Cal, what questions do you have for Mr. Ron now? He's flown for Elvis now for a few years. We've heard some stories about the King. What do you got?
It's definitely went too quick, Chris. I got so many questions I'd like to ask him, but I don't want to hold him up a whole lot. But Ron, speak to me about your and Elvis's flirtations with Linda Thompson. How he act like he'd get mad at you like y'all were flirting.
Oh, well, you know, I didn't see Linda. When we first went to work for Elvis, Linda was his girlfriend. And a very beautiful, she was Miss Tennessee of 74, or runner-up of, I don't know. When, but anyway, she was a very attractive young lady. And I hadn't seen her for about a month, and I'm doing some paperwork. And here comes Elvis and Linda Thompson into the cockpit. Hey, gang, how's it going? And I was doing some paperwork, and I just turned around and looked at her, and my mouth just dropped wide open. And Elvis says, Ron, I won't use the words he used. But he said, Ron, don't even think about it. And she, here's a scale. Now, she had American Native Indian outfit on with blonde hair and a feather in her hair. Oh. And it was just too much. So anyway, then we got to going wherever we were going to. And she would always, her and Elvis would normally always come in the cockpit. And then she would kiss the engineer and both of us pilots on the cheek. And she kissed the engineer, and then she whispered, she kissed me on the cheek and whispered in my ear, Ron, don't give up. You still got a chance. Yeah, like Roy. Oh,
she gave you that wink, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That's just mean, Ron.
So let's fast forward to the day of Elvis's passing. Everyone knows where they were at, what they were doing. Can you kind of walk us through those steps where you were at? I know y'all were getting ready to leave out, weren't you?
Well, we were going to Portland, Maine that night. And in the morning, I was talking to Vernon, getting, you know, straight on a bunch of things. And I had previously asked Elvis if we could race his go-karts. Because he had some real wicked go-karts. I mean, wicked. And I enjoyed driving them. And so I went out there after I got done with Vernon. And I was, you know, Vernon wasn't in that good a physical shape, really. And lots of times we'd have, he would have a nurse go with him. But anyway, so I was out racing his go-karts, having a blast. And then I thought, well, we're going to fly tonight, and who knows how long we're going to fly, although it's a reasonably short flight to Portland, Maine. I better go home and get some sleep. And then I saw Nancy, I think it was Nancy, his secretary, escorting him into the mansion. So I guess they had already told Vernon that Elvis had passed away.
So you talked about you flew out and picked up Priscilla and George Hamilton and those folks, and that was the last flight you did. But you said the air traffic control folks were giving their condolences all the way back across to Memphis, correct?
Well, the ATC would just let us, at that time, just about let us do anything we want within reason.
Yeah.
You know, I was going from, I think it was Lincoln to Rapid City, South Dakota. And we were flying, we flew IFR all the time, but, you know, a lot of the times it was VFR or visual. And so somebody came up, I can't remember who it was, and said, "Hey, Elvis has never seen Mount Rushmore. Can we circle over that?" So we asked ATC, said, "Hey, can we circle around there?" They said, "Just do it. Left or right turns, your choice." So we made a, you know, three or four turns to the left around it, and then we made three or four turns to the right around it, and then we told ATC, "Well, we're ready to come to South Dakota or Rapid City," and they said, "Come on, here we go." So that was pretty neat.
You guys basically, you couldn't land at any private airfields much as big as that plane was, could you?
Well, no. You know, for example, we wouldn't go into Tahoe because he was performing there. And we just wouldn't go into Tahoe. So we went into Reno, and then we limoed on up to Tahoe.
As you do.
Yeah. One final question for me. I've heard it, but I know these guys haven't and our listeners haven't. Tell us about the funeral procession with your car.
Well, I still got the car. It's a 1973 Corvette, and it was pretty neat. Well, I don't know if it was neat or not. But anyway, we drove, my wife and I drove it into the mansion, and we were supposed to get in the limos after the, you know, before the funeral, and then escort him into the to the initial grave, final, the first one. And so I parked my yellow vet in the back where I was supposed to, and pretty soon somebody asked the cops, or the cops asked them, says, "Who owns that yellow vet?" And I said, well, they came up to me, and, "Well, I ain't done nothing wrong." And the cop says, "Do you own that vet?" I says, "You bet." They said, "Hey, would you mind driving that in a funeral procession?" And I said, "Oh, it'd be my pleasure, but why are you doing that?" Well, there was tens of thousands of people lined up on Elvis Presley Boulevard. And they said, "Well, we don't know what's going to happen, so we would like for you to be the last car in the funeral procession because it's recognizable." And I says, "You bet, no problem." And then we did, and there was a cop car right behind me and a whole bunch of motorcycle policemen. And then we, you know, done the funeral, or the funeral procession, and then we done the funeral, and then the cop car behind me, he turned on his light and made a reverse course, and we were all supposed to go back to the mansion. Well, I thought that's where we were going, and you know, we were going 70, 80, 90 mile an hour down the streets, and the cops were all, you know, the motorcycle cops were stopping the traffic and all that, and we're headed, and my wife says, "Ron, I don't think we should be here." And I says, "Well, what do you mean?" She says, "Well, when you get time, look in the mirror, there's nobody behind us." And there was. And I thought, "Woo, boy, this is interesting. But hell, I'm just going to keep on going because I'm having a blast, you know." And then we missed the turnoff to go to the mansion. And I thought, "Ooh, this is strange." So we just kept on going. And we landed there. We drove on up to the airport. And then this guy jumps out with a patrolman and jumps on this King Air and off he taxis. And so I asked the troops at Memphis Air, I says, "Who in the hell was that?" They said, "That was the governor of Tennessee."
Wow. So, you was running blocker for the governor of Tennessee.
Yeah.
So Ron, with the passing of Elvis, I mean, where did that leave you? I mean, you were his 24/7 standby pilot. You know, with his passing, I mean, what was your role beyond that after his death?
Well, after he died, and we made the trip to the West Coast and back, then I got hired with an outfit that was out of Tucson, Arizona, Marana. And I told Vernon Presley, I said, after a couple of weeks, I says, you know, I got a chance to go back with the airlines, and I am. And so I'm leaving here. And he says, oh, no. He says, I'm going to pay you, no problem, exactly what I paid you before. And we said, well, I said, no, I'm going back with the airlines because seniority means everything. And he says, well, I'm going to send a check to you. And I says, if you do, I'll just tear it up.
Oh.
And that was it. So I went back with the airlines, and I started off as a co-pilot on the DC-8. And 6 months later, I was captain. And then 6 months later, I was a check captain on the 8.
That's great. I got one more question for you. So I've met a couple people in my career that had some meetings with Elvis, and I've seen a couple like the TCB necklaces and things like that. Is there anything that you have from those days like that an Elvis fan would just freak out over as far as memorabilia or anything special that you have from those days that would just be a priceless thing for you?
I got a couple items. In fact, some of them I'm going to take to Memphis tomorrow. But the TCB, I still got the one that Elvis gave me. And he didn't just throw it on your lap or nothing. He had a little presentation, and he put it over your head. And it was pretty nice, really nice.
That's priceless. Priceless.
So you were part of, you consider yourself part of the Memphis Mafia?
No, no. That was a different group.
Two kinds of podcasts, and this ain't one of them. Ron Strauss, we have enjoyed our time. We got so many more questions we could ask you. So if we can, when we come to vacation in Florida this June, we'll probably come find and look you up, and we'll sit around and talk more facts.
You got my phone number, and I live right near Daytona, just about 10 miles from the racetrack.
So what would you say is your favorite place to eat there in Daytona and the Ormond Beach area?
Oh, there's so many of them. You take your pick.
Well, the next meal, sir, is on us. Listen, you have a safe trip. You have a safe trip to Memphis, and y'all take care. And if you need us, call us. You got my number.
You got it.
All right, buddy. Thanks,
Ron. Take care, bud.
Boys, that was quite an interview.
Ron Strauss. Who would have thunk it?
Ron Strauss. Elvis's pilot.
With us, telling stories.
I mean, Cal, who do you have next? George Hamilton?
I ain't got no idea.
You ain't got George Hamilton?
No, we ain't got nobody booked.
He's next. We gotta get George
Hamilton. There's no telling who it's going to be. Like I said, we have been on a run.
You got to stay tuned, folks. Hey, I hear the music cueing.
Speaking of run.
To leave the building.
You got to leave the building.
You've been listening to The Crossing, where the music meets the memories. We're out of here. Hit it, Steve.
O.C. T.C. Ryder. O.C. What you have done.
The Crossing, where music meets memories, is recorded at Due South Productions, high atop the northeast tower of Pete's Castle in South Coal Mountain, Georgia, and is recorded and mixed by Steve Thomason. Hosted by Coal Mountain Cal Hearn and Chris Cheatham. Theme music written, performed, and recorded by Wendell Cox. The Crossing is a production of Roadhog Music and may not be rebroadcast without the express written consent of Due South Productions or at least a text message from Coal Mountain Cal's razor phone. That'll work too. All rights reserved. All right, we'll catch you next time right here on The Crossing.